Session number 10699, Brigadier Rainer Jones, part 19.
How did when you arrived in August 43, the Stern Gang was in operation and there were murders and assassinations going on. How do you think the situation got worse? Could you chart through as the situation got worse in your years?
Well, the Stern Gang, with the war on, we were able to contain them pretty well. It was only very occasional murders.
What measures did you take to contain the Stern Gang? How did you go about containing them?
Well, the Stern Gang, when I arrived, things had been a bit complicated. We got a certain amount of them in our famous Latrun camp, where they had a damn good time. And there was a fellow who had been a university man who was the head of them. And it was an extraordinary thing how this chap and 19 other of the Stern Gang were in my Latrun camp. And they plotted to get out. This was before I was responsible, because there was a silly ass, we won't mention his name, who'd been put in charge there, who didn't take the proper measures in a camp like that. And when these fellows showed an interest in gardening round the very nice huts, and the earth was going up and they were preparing it, that earth was coming from a tunnel. It wasn't a very long one, outside the barbed wire and so on of the place. And eventually they got free. He was a very big man. I don't know how he managed to squeeze through. And Friedman Yelin was his name. That wasn't his name afterwards. And he rather himself gave up the violent side of life when he retired from it. And it was left with wilder people. His number two was Shamir.
Now
And
that's the current,
that's the
the Israel.
president, that's the present prime minister.
Were you aware of Shamir's activities at the time, or is it with retrospectively you realise?
Oh, no. This was when I took over, how are we going to deal with these people who've got free because they were the most violent? And what we used to do, I gave orders that in Tel Aviv, which was entirely Jewish, as you know, they'd shut up a bit of road and then search the people or challenge the people. And in that way, I got about five or six of these fellows, because they all opened fire, of course, then, and our fellows shot them. They were killed. Well, they gave up that way then, the Stern Gang, and they only carried guns when they went out to do a murder. You see? So we were containing them all right, except in a country like that, when you were doing the job, an ordinary police work and so on, how were you to stop our fellows, the famous Wilkin, who was living with a Jewish, and she was of a family who were entirely violent people. But she was very valuable. He was very valuable to Dick Catling and his, what do we call him? And I heard, because Giles Bay came to me and said that they were after him, after Wilkin. And I said, and I saw Wilkin myself. And on both occasions I said, he is not to walk to his duty in the morning in the sunshine. He is to go in a police vehicle or with a guard. And of course the silly ass, a very nice day, thought it's a lovely day. And he walks off. And they're waiting for him around the corner and he's dead. You see? So it was very difficult to contain. I was rushing around the countryside, seeing the various Bill Barker and Cafferata in their places, and said, now come round with me and show me what you're doing in defence, barbed wire, plots and plans and so on, to stop these things happening. And we've
Was
got
this?
to close the place down in that respect.
Did you take these actions to defend the police stations before they declared war on the Palestinian police, or after? I mean, was this before in February
No,
44?
the only thing you did in the old days It was the normal, what you might call proper peacetime thing in a violent country. And that is to say, we always had police lookouts on the roof, which served us very well. We also had all the men wise as to the dangers of doing this and that.
What sort of dangers? Could you run through some of the things that they should or shouldn't do that were dangerous?
Well, the people coming to the police force should be challenged. And as in that famous occasion when they came to Ramat Gan disguised as a police inspector in charge of Arab noughties, arguing about the cost of washing, that got them in. Then they took their things off and got some arms out, and in the end it finished in Dov Gruner being killed on the wire when he was dragging a thing of gelignite in. Not killed, but his jaw shattered and so on. And we killed two or three of the others, the men on the roof, you see.
Now, these attacks on the police station, they only happened after the declaration of war, and that was in, was that February 44? Declaration of, yeah, of war against the Palestinian police. That happened in December, February 44, did it? Yeah. And that was the next, so you had the...
You'd had the same sort of things, in a minor way, in the Arab revolt.
But this was the big... you were carrying on, and your first job was containing the Stern Gang, and that was from when you got there. And then in February 44, there was this big upgrade, a big increase.
But this was the big, and this was the Irgun. The Irgun, yes. This was the trouble.
And what were the Irgun doing? What type of attacks were they doing on the Palestinians?
Well, as I say, he was saying that his idea was not violence except to show we were fools, but it didn't stop them killing a hell of a lot. They're blowing up police stations. That was their main way of doing it. Except when they got very violent in 1945, and they had a series of things in which the Haganah took part in one against Ben-Gurion's wishes. And they attacked my Coast Guard stations. Hello. And they attacked all sorts of things. The Irgun blew up some of my police vessels. And I had them replaced at once by RAF rescue, things which were much better. And... I can't tell you. You say, what provisions did you make? It was... You had to organise the whole time. It was a terrific hidden attack by these terrorists. That was why Ben-Gurion was so anxious to cooperate. And we were arresting hundreds of people at my CID political... were finding the names of and so on.
So the police station, you went round improving the defences of the police station. That was largely barbed wire and such like, you said.
Well, I'd put it this way, that I went round to see if they were doing enough and to plotting so on. And I was having almost once a week the heads of the PMF and the districts and so on, in my office, we were thrashing these things out, ad lib.
So the defence is a thing. Now, the intelligence that enabled you to... the arrest programmes based on the intelligence, where was the intelligence coming from? It was coming from the political CID. And how were they actually getting this information?
Well, they're getting, owing to my having gone to Ben-Gurion, he was making the Jewish agency cooperate. And they disliked it intensely, people like Dr. Joseph and Zaslani, who'd been poisoning the air about police for a long time. But their boss, Ben-Gurion, was taking a very rough line with them. And
so the information was largely coming from the Jewish agency?
Not largely. No, we were getting it ourselves by our incredibly fine CID political under Catling.
And what sources were they using? Where were they getting this information from?
Oh, all sorts of ways. I was having presented to me, word for word, secret conferences at the Jewish Agency, and there was it on my desk. How did we get it? That helped.
How did you get it?
How did we get it? Through my people, you see, their agents.
But what method?
In other words, we had our people who were actually, this is like MI5 and MI6, who were actually part of the Jewish Agency. Okay?
So, besides...
This was highly organized, although I must say it was incredibly good. That's why when we heard that they were going to blow up the King David, that we knew they were right.
I'm going to come to that whole question, because that's crucial, I think, that whole thing. But, so not only was the Jewish Agency helping you, but you also had people inside the Jewish Agency who were helping you more than they thought. They were actually...
Well, you say that, that's putting it rather large. But we certainly had agents here, agents who were able to have contact in some way with the Jewish Agency. We got them. You might say, how is it the papers get these secret things these days? Because there's some louse behind the scenes who's prepared to give it to the press to make money.
Right. What about this, your contacts with Ben-Gurion? You've touched on it slightly, but can you tell us about your relationship with him from when you first met him, running through to when you became friends?
Well, you see, that built up because I was getting so fed up because these various people in the Jewish Agency were trying to prove that we were pure poison, and it used to make me so angry. In the end, I said to Harry Balin, a very nice little man, rather weak, he was the Jewish Agency contact with my force. I wanted more than that because these people were doing us damage, spreading the word that we were entirely foul and so on, you see. So I said to Harry Balin when he came in, I want to see Ben-Gurion. Will you arrange? So it was arranged that I should go and see him on a certain day. And I went round there, and I rather let fly and talked to Ed Lib and said that we could go on like this, and I wasn't going to have it, you see. And I wanted his cooperation, because all I was getting... What I hadn't realized was that these fellows were doing it quite contrary to anything he wanted. And so he got up in the end, after about an hour of me letting off, and said, I think you're a very violent young man. I was 47, incidentally. And I'm not going to promise you anything. And I thought in a way, he'd been a bit twinkling, nevertheless. And I thought to myself, I don't know whether you like me, but I certainly like you. And in spite of his protest, the day after, he sent my old friend, who became the mayor of Jerusalem, to me as his personal one. So I had Harry Balin. And they worked together. And in England later, I was able to use them to stop the explosive letter campaign and introduce them. I said, these fellows are prepared to help me. I took him into the commissioner of police then. And he said, oh, that's very good. He didn't know what he was talking about, of course. But it resulted in the campaign completely finishing. And that was my old friend, who is still my old friend now, as mayor of Jerusalem.
So this was the first sign of a thawing with Ben-Gurion, when he sent you this personal aid. How did that progress then?
Well, of course, he wasn't in my pocket, and I wasn't in his. And I was only... trusting chief of police. He was a big man, a very great man. And I didn't come in contact with him personally, but he was working all out to get his fellows to cooperate with me. And they're still my friends.
What do you think made him change his mind from what he said at your first meeting?
Did you actually... didn't change his mind. He was just going to tell me this. And I told you about how I saw him and a great friend of mine who was running this very important line in government with their heads down. I went over and said, what are you two bad boys planning? And he never changed. He never changed at all. He and his successor, the good lady, they were always very much anti-terrorists. Although we hadn't been very clever, you know. We'd promised both sides so much. Churchill and so on producing ridiculous things to the Jews and planning behind the scenes to give them a much earlier state of Israel. And at the same time, letting down the Arabs, who had been the major helpers to us in getting the country.
Okay, so we were running through the things that you did. So you defended the police stations, you the intelligence work and your relationship with the Jewish agency to try and cause...
Oh, it was much more than that. We were the police force. We were law and order. And we were also having to take the place of the military in fighting these people. But you see, there was no open fighting. And where I say it was all to our credit, when it came to that great November the 10th, or 11th, 1945, the big, that was the key thing, when they had these great riots and so on.
Is that when the strike was? There was...
Yes, it was a strike, which resulted, it started off with them burning the local government offices down at Jaffa. And then, as you know, we contained them. And it was only them sweeping down a side street which took away this sergeant of mine. And he had a bad scalp wound and he was going fast. He got against a wall and drew his revolver. And then this mayor from the desert came in and said, hold on while I'm coming, and burst through. And they worked their way along to his Jewish friends in their house and held the door. And he said, take this bloke, because he was passing out, my chap. Up and cover him with blankets upstairs. He was bleeding like hell, and which they did. And when he recovered a bit, he came down and he said, look, because he was holding the door still against the mob, he said, I'm going to give myself up because they'll come in and kill your friends and you. You see, and the Jewish man said, not a bit of it. And just then, the... armoured car of a PMF patrol came by, and this chap saying, oh, yeah, I got one of your fellows here, you better take him away. That was more or less the end of it, you see.
How did you control the rioting and the crowd movements? What methods would the police employ?
Well, we knew this one was coming, you see, and I said, only the police who are always carrying guns will carry guns. We are going to do this show back to the battens entirely. And we'll dig up stores, and where we haven't got battens, because we wanted, I think it was 400, we'll have chair legs. We've got plenty of them. And I had a picture of these fellows practicing. It was a marvellous athletic thing. These fellows in their summer kit. And with their batons and chair legs. It was a wonderful sight. And
you were determined, but you didn't want them opening fire on the crowd, so you didn't want them...
They never did during my time. There was no thing like that. There was no capital punishment.
I'm going to come back to the capital punishment.
Well, so, the whole point, this is what was bred in them. They knew it. And this was a force of all sorts. Hundreds and thousands of men. And they never let the party down. There was never a shot after the barber.
So they were all given these batons and trained in the use. And then how did they actually control the crowd on the day? Did they have to use the batons?
Oh, yes. Well, there was the threat of the batons at any rate. Oh, yes. Believe me, this was a crowd who were out for trouble. They'd burnt down our buildings and they were walking up towards Jerusalem. They were still in Jaffa, you see. And the police broke them up. They always had, or nearly always had, don't want to exaggerate, the pregnant women in the front ranks in the hope that we'd kill one or do something dreadful. And there was one case when one was killed, but it was because one woman who was behind the front rank was heaving up a great concrete block, threw it like that, she wasn't strong enough, and descended on front rank of the women and killed one of them. That was the only death there was.
How did the police deal with that problem of using women in the front rank? What would they do? How did they overcome that problem?
Well, by tackling the men behind.
So they just ignored the women, you mean?
Ignore them, yes. Of course they ignored them. And the women, they were very bitter, terrible. Terrible, really, it was. You wouldn't think they were women at all. This is where people go mad, particularly fundamentalists, you know. They're quite prepared to give their own lives. And I think that you can say that it's all to our credit that it could be. I mean, look how the Jews themselves are using these crowds. What are they doing with people throwing stones? You think we didn't have bricks and things thrown at us? As well as arms when they could, shooting my police. Do you think that? Look what's happening now with the Jews doing the same thing down in, not only in Gaza, but in the West Bank. They're shooting, they're killing them every day. Men, women and children, Arabs. How do you think they get away with their own accusations against police who never did it at all? And I must say to you that when the army came in and did these things with their military courts and so on and their roughnecks, it killed the show. It finished the mandate. But we didn't.
Well, let's go on to that now. You didn't. That they'd used military courts under Montgomery or in the Arab Revolt, 36.
Well, we didn't use them.
But you didn't. Had they used them before you arrived, or did you just continue not to use them, or did you actually stop?
Of course,
them?
They used them under Monty.
No, I mean before you got there in August 43. Had they used them under the previous
regime? No, I'm not claiming benefit for that. They hadn't used it since the end of the war.
And could you just explain why you felt that this was the right policy and that you were so enthusiastic in following not using death penalties in military courts? Could you just explain that for us?
Well, I should compare it in these days with our own troubles. We tried to do in London and in other forces. We try not to use unnecessary force. That's why I'm so desperately against using cavalry charges against football crowds. And also for any wildness, I mean, what went wrong in Ireland when the military went out there in the what they call Bloody Sunday? It was nothing like Bloody Sunday in Ireland that we put up with. But the troops got overexcited, and rather like General Dyer in Amritsar, when they thought the things were too violent, they fired and they killed somebody. Well, that's absolutely against anything that I insisted on doing in the Palestine police. You can't. You kill yourselves if you do the same as terrorists, you know. You may think that I'm talking past nonsense, but I know that I had my police and that they all followed me. And you never had a case of that while I was there at all, except the barber. And we know that the barber was as guilty as blazes, and some people would say, why shouldn't they shoot him? He was going out to cut the hair of some terrorists lying on the ground, obviously. He was quite a nice little man, otherwise.
You didn't use, I mean, you wouldn't use weapons as you, in this way, but what about how badly would people be beaten? If, you know, with the batons and such like, how far would they go?
There
with
was
that?
No beating at all. The only use of baton was to stop the crowd doing something, as it is in England. And the greatest proof of this success was in the Jewish press, the hostile Jewish press, who had nothing but praise, for once, for police on that day. All the horrors came from their side. If you see what I mean.
So on this day, November, I think it was 11th or whatever, the crowd control techniques worked. Did the crowd disperse once you'd stopped them?
They did in the end, yes.
And what about the strike?
Then these people who came down from the side, that was a separate issue, you see. The main part, the crowd, when they found that there was a very healthy opposition to them in the way of police, they dispersed. You couldn't do anything else. You couldn't chase them back into their rabbit holes.
Now, within this thing, you wanted to make clear that you had no trouble with the black and tan contingent within the Palestine police. Would you like to just comment on that a little further? You've already
Yes, well, I never looked on any part of the Palestine police as being black and tan. The Palestine police was finally, in 1926, was a collection of all there was for all and order out there. That was the original thing which Tudor was commanding at one time, and Bramley became the first IG. But at the same time, in order to deal with the difficulties of the country, and it was already the Arabs were murdering Jews and things, and of course you've got the countermeasures coming up. In order to deal with this very difficult part in the country, Tudor organized the, certainly not the black and tans, but he organized a force. One Palestinian under Freddie Bucher, who was a brigadier, a very fine regular soldier, and later the British section under Brigadier MacNeil, full of very good people, nothing to do with the black and tans, but naturally, in order to use these people in the, what you might say, the more active part of the show, a great many of them were the black and tans. We must remember these were people who were very disappointed with what was offered in Britain after that war. We were a bankrupt country. Everybody was fed up. They were out of work.